Donny Osmond has become a worldwide music legend, selling over 100 million records, receiving 33 gold records, and has performed to millions of fans around the globe during his six-decade-long career. He's bringing his Las Vegas show to Palace Theater in Albany, New York on July 3rd. He headlines his award-winning solo residency at Harrah's, a musical journey of his unparalleled life as one of the most recognized entertainers in the world. December of 2024 will mark the return to the stage for Donny Osmond at the Edinburgh Playhouse in Scotland, where he will once again headline in Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. Donny Osmond further gained fame due to the success of the 1970s variety series Donny and Marie, which Osmond hosted with his sister Marie. The Donny and Marie duo also released a series of top 10 hits and gold albums and hosted a syndicated and daytime talk show. Donny and Marie retired from headlining an 11-year Las Vegas residency at the Flamingo Las Vegas in 2019. Again, one of the most recognized entertainers in the world, and it is quite the treat to welcome Donny Osmond to the roundtable this morning. How are you, sir?
Well, that was quite the intro. Thank you so much.
It's a real pleasure. It's a lot of fun. You know this. You live this. But my goodness, looking at your biography, there are so many things that you've done. There have been so many facets to your career. It's such a long career. It is amazing to think of all that you have accomplished.
Well, it's been over six decades, and that's pretty much what this show is all about that I'm touring with. It's the show that I have in Las Vegas, and I wanted as many people to see it as possible because I realized not everybody can come to Las Vegas, so I decided to bring it out on the road before I close it down.
What is it like to be back on a bus? I mean, you've pretty much been on some sort of touring bus your entire life, haven't you?
Yeah. Well, it's show business, you know. It's not all glamorous, but I enjoy it. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing this. It's probably the most extensive tour I've ever launched, 46 cities in just a little about 2 months. But it's a big show, and I wanted a lot of people to see it.
What is it about putting a show together like this that you sort of satisfy everyone's Donny Osmond fix, in the sense of the people who know you from this or know you from that or know you from this or know you from that?
Okay, that's a great question, because like last night, I look out in the audience and there's teenagers, there's little kids in the show now. It's quite interesting what's happening to my career. And I do a request segment where the audience can pick any song I've ever recorded on all 65 albums, and the audience controls the show basically for about a half hour. And I had teenagers requesting songs, but they only knew me from like Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat or The Masked Singer or Mulan, things like that.
Right.
Whereas other people, I call them the puppy lovers, they were requesting songs from the earlier albums. It's really a fascinating segment of the show because you get the full spectrum of music from all 65 albums.
Donny Osmond will be at the Palace Theater on July 3rd. You know, I did some simple math while I was putting together the introduction. Not on purpose, but when I said that you hosted Donny and Marie, that show went on the air in 1976. You were 19 years old when that show went on the air.
Well, actually, no, let's go back before that. We started, did the pilot when I was 16 and Marie was 15. But then again, even go back further, I started singing professionally at five.
Right.
So it's been a crazy, crazy six decades.
Absolutely. So I mean, you have the Andy Williams years, and then Fred Silverman sees you, and then you take over for what, Mike Douglas for a while, and then then he offers you the show, and then you get Donny and Marie, and then it's your show. But you have your own network show at 19 years old. That's nuts.
Yeah, it's crazy. But what's really strange, Joe, is that it was just normal to me. That was my life. And the older you get, the more you can look back and realize, no, that's pretty, as young Frankenstein said, abnormal, you know? Kind of an abnormal life.
Sure.
But it was my life. It was my norm, you know?
I'm a little bit country. And I'm a little bit rock and roll. I'm a little bit of Memphis and Nashville. With a little bit of Motown in my soul. I don't know if it's good or bad.
And do you look back at any aspect of that? I mean, we all have negative aspects to our life. I'm not saying that. But,
yeah.
Do you look back at any of that as saying, oh, I wish that hadn't been the case? Or has it all been, when you look at it in its totality, something that you're proud of as a career and a life?
No, I am proud of it. I mean, there was a transition from being a teeny bopper to a more mature entertainer. It was really difficult. But when Soldier of Love came out, that's the thing that put me back on the charts. But when I did Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, that's what really solidified the fact that, okay, I'm not 15 years or 14 years old anymore to the public, because the perception is, and it's human nature, people put you in a little pigeonhole. They think, oh, he recorded Puppy Love, that's all he sings for the rest of his life. But there's so many different facets, and that's what's interesting about this show, is that it shows the six decades, the transitions, the different careers and reinventions over the years.
I heard Soldier of Love on my way home about two nights ago, 80s on 8. And there you are, Soldier of Love. And that was in 1989 or so. And yeah, that's the big comeback. Now, what I didn't know until I started getting ready for the interview is that you sort of went through British channels to get that whole project going.
That's right. It was Peter Gabriel that I worked with, and we released a few things over in the UK. Nothing really lit on fire, so to speak, until a fan of mine actually brought a 45, back in the days when we had 45s, to New York, and they started playing it anonymously. It became the mystery singer, as it were, mystery artist, and it was a big campaign. Nowadays, with social media the way it is, this could never happen again, but people started trying to guess who this was, and when they found out, it just went to the top of the charts. It was an amazing marketing campaign that was just happened by itself. It was organic. It wasn't even planned.
And were you ready for that, even though you had seen such success, that then you returned to that, of what is that like to say, oh, okay, we're on the horse again?
No, it was different, because think about it, wear my shoes for a second. Prior to that whole Soldier of Love reincarnation, so to speak, reinvention, it was the Donnie and Marie show. And prior to that, it was the Puppy Love, Donnie Hysteria, as they called it, you know. But now people were coming to the shows in 89 and 90 with a big question mark in their minds. What is Donny Osmond these days? This is kind of intriguing. Then I came up with my follow-up single, Sacred Emotion, which really solidified it, because then it said to the industry, this is just not a trend or a fad. He's back for good. Then I went into musical theater, and that's what really solidified it. And then one thing led to another, and then finally I won Dancing with the Stars, and that brought in a whole new audience. And then Mulan, Captain Chang and Mulan, that brought in a whole new audience. And so it's really intriguing to see the reinventions over the years.
I don't have to tell you this, but you know that there are many, many, many performers who have started at the age that you started that have not been able to sustain any semblance of a career like that, in the sense of that they have all of these different benchmarks throughout their career. What do you think has allowed for that, in the sense of besides just good old-fashioned luck, of what you've been able to do to continue the relevancy that you have today?
Well, that old-fashioned word luck is coupled with another old-fashioned four-letter word called work.
Right.
It takes a lot of work and dedication. Now, granted, yes, I understand what you're saying. A lot of artists that have gone through that dynamic of teeny bopperism and all that kind of stuff have had a difficult time. But thank goodness I had parents that established a good family home base for me. And I married a wonderful lady that has been with me for 46 years. And we have five great sons and all married, 14 grandchildren. That's the foundation, Joe. That kind of keeps my feet on the ground, because when you hit stage, it's a whole other world. You put on another hat. You become an entertainer. You become a star. You become, you know, this legend on stage. But when the curtain closes, you're a husband, you're a father, your grandpa. You go home and you take out the trash. And I make sure I do all that stuff because you got to balance your life out. And that's one of the things a lot of legends, if you want to use that term, and I appreciate you putting me in that category, but they lose it because they start believing their own hype. And that's something I learned from Elvis Presley years and years ago when I met him.
What did you learn? What did he say to you?
Well, I saw him on his closing night. It was at called the International Hotel.
Yeah.
Turned into the Hilton. But anyway, I saw him on his closing night, and we were opening the following night on the same stage. So we were in his dressing room on opening night, 10 minutes before the show starts. In walks Elvis. And he says, "Hi, everybody, I'm Elvis Presley." And it was really strange, Joe, because 24 hours ago, I saw him on stage as a monster. And he walks in so humbly and introduces himself with his name. I remember thinking to myself, and I'm 14 at the time. I remember thinking, yeah, you don't have to introduce. We all know your name. The world knows your name. But he introduced himself very calmly and quietly and humbly. And I recognized there, probably not to the fullest extent until later on in my life, but I recognized that there are two different personas. There is a monster on stage, and then when the curtain closes, you put your pants on one leg at a time like everybody else.
When you were doing the show, when you were doing Donnie and Marie, and you did that show for, what, 4 years, 5 years?
4 years.
And it is, I remember that. I grew up with that show. I love that show. And that was, in those days, appointment television. That was, you would have to stop what you were doing and go see Donnie and Marie. There was very much a skeleton to that show where you knew where you were going to be at any given time, regular segments. But you get to show off many facets of your talent, not only the singing, which of course is the major part, but then also acting and just goofing around with the likes of Ruth Buzzi and Paul Wynn. God love you for that.
Right. It was crazy. It was really crazy.
So, I don't even know how to ask this. What kind of things does a 19-year-old talk to Paul Wynn about?
Well, it's quite funny because Paul, as funny as he was, and this is what kind of made him funny, he hated children. And he really didn't like being on the Donnie and Marie show because he hated children and or youngsters. But that's what was so fun in rehearsal hall. He could just hardly wait to get out of there. But that's what made it funny.
Well, it's almost 5 o'clock. I guess that's my last road test. Now, let's see. Today I gave license to 48 potential killers. And I'll probably meet every one of them on my way home tonight. Sorry, was I in your way?
Excuse me, are you the man who gives the road test?
No, I'm Evel Knievel, and you're in my pit stop.
Hey, Donnie's here to take his road test.
Yeah. This is my sister, Marie. Can she sit in the back while I take my test?
Well, it's better than one of those plastic dogs with its head going up and down. What is this? A car or a souped-up skateboard?
This is my car.
Has anyone reported this accident?
Donnie built this dune buggy by himself.
Yeah.
Oh, when's he going to finish it? Neil Armstrong junked this on the moon. Well, let's get this over.
Ruth Buzzi, on the other hand, I still stay in touch with her. She was just, she brought that whole laugh-in persona. She was willing to do anything, which is really interesting, Joe, because the stars that we had on were like the best of the best.
Yeah.
And back in those days, everybody, including the legends, were willing to try anything. Unlike today, where everybody's so afraid of their image and with social media, they have to make sure they get all the likes they can. No, back then, everybody just say, show me the script, show me the character, and let me at it. Doing things with Lucille Ball and Bob Hope, and John Wayne was on, and he was willing to do stuff. And I mean, all of these people were just willing to just make it the best possible skit or segment of the show, whereas nowadays it's so polished, there's not a lot of improv and natural laughter.
When you then move on, and as you say, you did musical theater, you're going back to musical theater later this year. You'll be back in Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat in a different role.
I'm going to be playing the Pharaoh. This is going to be so fun. Can you imagine, Joe? You know, what I'm talking about when I talk about the fourth wall
right.
in theater. Well, typically you don't break the fourth wall. Well, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat was written to break that fourth wall, let alone me, who have been playing, you know, Joseph for 6 years, 2,000 shows. Can you imagine the fun I'm going to have when I, as Pharaoh, walk down to whoever Joseph is going to be? Can you imagine the dialogue that I can come up with every night? You know, just change it up and break that fourth wall. It's going to be hilarious.
And you look forward to it. That'll be good to get back into that.
Oh, it's going to be so much fun. It'll be a blast playing a different role in that show that I'm known so well for, you know, as Joseph.
I closed my eyes, drew back the curtain to see for certain what I thought I knew. Far, far away, someone was weeping, but the world was sleeping. Any dream will do.
I wore my coat
with golden lining, bright colors shining, wonderful and new.
But do you see it moving once you're done in Scotland, going elsewhere with it?
Well, that's up to Andrew Lloyd Webber. I would imagine so if I was a betting man, because it was such a big part of my career. But it really is not up to me. It's up to Andrew.
So you have the show in Vegas, and which you're bringing out on the road, and then before that you had the Donny and Marie residency in Vegas. And do you always see yourself having some connection to that city?
Of course. I started playing Vegas when I was about 7 years old, and I remember working with Sinatra and, of course, Andy Williams. You name it, I worked with them. So Vegas has played a very, very important role in my entire career. I was doing an interview not long ago, and this guy said something that kind of stopped me in my tracks because I never really thought about it. He said, "Do you realize what's happening to your career right now?" I said, "Oh, sure, absolutely." And he said, "No, do you realize what's happening? You not only have a show in Vegas on the Strip, the best location possible. If you look at the billboard, you're just using your first name. How many people get that opportunity?" And I thought, my goodness, he's absolutely right. I just have Donnie up there on the billboard.
Right.
And I appreciate that so much because I've been in the business forever, and it always hasn't been on top. I lost my career after the Donnie Marie days, rebuilt it for Soldier, as we discussed earlier. So when you lose something and get it back, you appreciate it so much more.
And I use this word extremely loosely, which how desperate were you to get it back? In the sense of, was that like, oh, I'd like to go and keep doing this because I enjoy doing this, or I'll have to find something else?
Well, both, actually. When you start out professionally at five, and that's all you know is to get on stage and entertain, and you lose it, you kind of think, oh, my goodness, I have a family now. I've got to support them. And I lost everything financially, so I wasn't independently wealthy. You think, like, oh, my goodness. Desperation kind of sets in a little bit.
Right.
But there was a point in time where I thought, I've got to change everything. And this is after Peter Gabriel got involved. Not a lot of stuff actually happening. There was no action over in the UK. And it was Christmas of 88. I thought, I've got to change businesses and support my family. And that's when I got the call that WPLJ in New York, the number one station at the market at the time in the number one market, was playing my song, but they didn't know it was me. And I thought, oh my goodness, this is an opportunity to get it all back if I play my cards right. And everything worked.
Well, it's just been amazing watching you as a performer and to see you over all these years. When I was a kid and I was I knew I wanted to be on the radio when I was 4 years old. And so
wow.
In the 1970s, when the Donny and Marie wireless microphone came out, that was singular.
That's what did it, huh?
That was the greatest moment of my life because that actually worked. You could hear that signal right out of the radio.
It's us with our Donny Marie wireless microphone.
Set your AM radio at the proper frequency and your voice will be on the radio. 9-volt batteries not included.
try it.
Oh, yeah, agree, Tim.
Pretend you're Marie.
I can't sing.
Donnie and Marie wireless microphone, each sold separately from LJN.
And I thought, well, this is what I want to do. I'll let Donnie sing. I'll go be on the radio and talk to people. And it was such
You can relate. I can relate to that whole thing. You know, at 4 years old, you know what you want to do.
Yeah, and it's great. And then I thought, oh, my God, this microphone is the most amazing thing. And a couple years ago, a friend who we used to play radio got one on eBay and sent it to me. And it's just a lovely, lovely thing that I have. I can't tell you how much fun it is to talk to you. I can't tell you how much fun I look forward to seeing you in Albany on July 3rd. Please travel carefully and safely, and we look forward to having you in town.
Thank you, Joe. Great talking with you.
Be well. Take care. Donnie Osmond is bringing his Las Vegas show to the Palace Theater on July 3rd in Albany, New York. You can go to palacealbany.com for more information. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.